Hello, everyone. Podcasting from beautiful San Diego, this is the BD Biosciences Facts Matters podcast series. And I'm your host, Aaron Tishnick, an immunologist and a flow junkie. This show features casual conversations with researchers on the latest flow cytometry topics. Today, my guest is Dr. Alan Stahl. Alan is a BD fellow and principal scientist at BD Biosciences. For those that don't work for BD and don't know what those distinctions are, well, let's just say he's one of the greats. Prior to BD, he was an assistant professor at Columbia University Medical Center and was a postdoctoral fellow in, of course, the Herzenberg Laboratory in the mid-80s, what must have been an incredibly dynamic and exciting time. It's not that often that we get the opportunity to chat with someone with such a rich history in flow cytometry. In this podcast, I hope to get insights into, well, standardization. Why is it critical, and even more so today? Welcome, Alan.
Great to be with you, Aaron. Thanks.
Well, I guess I'll start out with a question regarding your time in the Herzenberg Laboratory, coming from like a microbiology and immunology PhD and in Chicago, of all places. I mean, was it the weather and the lure of California that brought you to Stanford, or was it more of a fact that maybe you're a surfer and it's just something I didn't quite know about you yet?
No, actually, it was more a fact that I got to work in the Golden Temple of Flow Cytometry. just a chance to be there and work with all that. And also, Stanford is one of the great immunology centers of the world, so you know, working with people like Irv Weissman and Lennon Lee and all the others at Stanford, it was just an amazing opportunity, both in terms of the science and in terms of the technology. Because we were just moving, at that point, we were moving from one and two colors into four and five colors. So we were opening science.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. For those that are ever curious, if you go to the Herzenberg Lab website, and you can go through and actually look at former trainees, and it's really a spectacular list of founding scientists, especially in the field of flow cytometry. You know, let's kind of lead into that a little bit. When you showed up, what was it like? What were people working on? Was it just the age of new fluorochromes? Was it just still trying to figure out how the darn things are going to work?
It was an exciting time because literally, it was the sort of not the earliest days, but when the convergence of monoclonal antibodies and flow cytometry and new dyes were coming together. Literally, at that time, people had just discovered or started utilizing new dyes like the phycobiliproteins APC and PE. We were still looking and developing monoclonals. I developed many monoclonals during my time at the Herzenberg. So we were developing and identifying new CD markers. They weren't called CD markers at the time. And then expanding, the number of colors and the technology. And the biology was just exciting. So it was a convergence of a lot of different areas of expertise and activities going on.
And I think one thing you just said there as well that makes me think like expertise, it wasn't maybe commonplace yet, right? People who were using these technologies probably had to be experts in the technology versus maybe today we have an instrument and it's just there and we start using it.
Yeah, that's a term that internally here in BD for the last number of years we've been using, but I think is appropriately so, which is literally, because I used to sit on a shared instrumentation grant board. And if a university was going to buy the shared instrumentation grant, they had to have somebody who was going to run that facility that had preferably 5 to 6 years of experience running flow cytometers. You know, today we like to think we have cytometers where people can pretty much walk up to them and put a sample on and get data. So, we talk about the democratization of flow cytometry. So it's much more available to the masses. And that's been two things going in the opposite directions. flow cytometry is becoming much more complicated because of all the different colors. So now we're talking about 28, 29, 30 colors. So that certainly makes things more complicated. But on the other side, our instrumentation has become much easier to use and more, you don't need 2 hours in the morning to set an instrument up.
So I guess that kind of leads into very nicely what I'd like to talk to you about a little bit today, which has to do with standardization and reproducibility of data. You know, I remember a few years back there's a big push regarding publications and NIH funding and so forth that we need to make our data more reproducible, and that also lends in heavily from the immunology side of people who utilize flow cytometers, that they need to have that standardization as well, and that goes beyond just the academic space, and it can
Absolutely.
Be clinical, pharmaceutical. Like, what have you seen over the years? Like, how have we tried to address this, and just as a field?
Well, I mean, if you really go back, you know, you would have one instrument in a whole facility, so that was sort of its own standardization because it was the one instrument. But now we have multiple labs that have. In one institution that will have instrumentation, you'll have multiple instruments within the same lab. And the other thing that's really, I think, changed both in science as a whole, but flow cytometry sees that, in that there's much, much more collaboration, in my opinion, of research going on. So you have multiple labs sharing in data. Truly in the clinical space, that's been true for many, many years, but we're seeing it more in the research space too. So the idea of being able to look at data and be able to directly compare it, you know, using the same axes, using the same reagents, you know, it really becomes critical in helping us to evaluate the data. So that's something that I've been interested in for years. One of the things when I came to BD, you know, transitioning out of an academic environment, one of the things that allowed me to do is to take all my frustrations and things that were difficult for me and try and, from the inside, make changes that would allow us to overcome that. So I would say the first thing that we did was the whole introduction of the CS&T as a cytometer setup and tracking as a way of standardizing instrument setup to get reproducibility. And I like to think about it, and this is in recent months, actually, we always talk about standardization, but that word means a lot of different things to different people. So for me, when I think of just standardization, I think of I have an instrument and I want it to give me the exact same data every single day reproducibly. So that instrument is now standardized. Then I think about cross-standardization, and that means I want to standardize and compare data from multiple instruments within the lab or across lab, so I have to set up my instruments such that I can do that. And that becomes more problematic because there are differences between instruments, so they can't be completely 100% the same.
Yeah, I mean, each instrument is unique. You know, maybe I was kind of naive when I came into the field thinking, and I should know better, if I get into one car or something, like everything is not exactly identical to another one, and they vary in features and so forth, and even if they're the same model and there's variations in how many horsepower or, you know, intensity of lasers, filters, and so you have within that one instrument to have that consistency, which is nice, but as you talked about and mentioned, as we've kind of gone into this larger, like, larger collaboration, whether it's in many different aspects, clinical and academic with large program project grants, you know, you need to be able to have these reproducible results across sites and to be able to make sure that the data that's being generated before you start doing large cohort studies, that you're looking at the same thing. So what's that? Like, what are some of the things that you've seen? Obviously, we don't have a situation where we can just push a button and magically over the internet all of the instruments are cross-standardized and set up. So we still have to do some of this manually, and where do you see the future going with that as well?
Well, in two directions. One is we do have to do it manually. it can be built into the instruments. The idea of cross-standardization can be built into a platform. That's what we built into the Lyric platform. But that's, again, intra-platform. When you think between instruments, then you do have to start thinking manually. But the key to me is I call it understanding your instrument. As a flow cytometrist, you often think of your instruments as your babies, and you have to learn to listen to them and what are they telling you. And the example that I give, because it made a big impression upon me, because in the early years I did everything on cell sorters, and I'd be quite honest, I'd never used an analyzer. And I was working in a field called B1 cells, where most of the markers on the populations were very, very dim and hard to resolve. And this was before we had all the wonderful new bright dyes we have now. And I remember reading a paper, and they just identified a new marker, and they had shown how to use this to help identify the population. And I literally spent 2 or 3 months trying to reproduce the data in that paper and failed spectacularly. And it finally dawned on me, because I went to another lab, they were using an analyzer and I was using a stream and air instrument, and the sensitivity on my instrument was never going to match the sensitivity on that analyzer. So I was never going to be able to resolve the population. So that's the case. You know, I had to learn to understand the differences between those two types of instruments. So understanding your instruments is a key, and that's where, again, CS&T and I want to say other types of systems, anything that can give you information on like Q and B and electronic noise, those types of metrics of instrument performance, those are key to understanding how your instrument is performing. The cross-standardization, in one sense, is very straightforward. It's almost too simple, but there's a lot of nuance to it. And when I talk about cross-standardization, what I mean is if I have a CD4 stain population on instrument A and they come out at 40,000 MFI, I want to run that same sample on instrument B and also have the positive cells come out at 40,000 so that visually the populations overlay. Mm-hmm. Now, they may not be identical. The negatives may look a bit different because of the sensitivity of the instrument, but that's the overall thing that I mean. And that's fairly straightforward to do just by using fluorescent controls. But that doesn't tell you the quality of the data you get, and that's, again, what you get from the Q values and the sensitivity values.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing a larger push towards kind of these standardization and kind of qualifications as well.
Oh, absolutely. Right now, I've been spending a large part of the last year working with various groups just trying to cross-standardize their instruments. It's critically important to their work.
Yeah, and I guess that also applies as well to reagents, and then, you know, trying to provide the tools to enable the researchers to actually move forward with these studies.
Yeah, we did a study a number of years ago where we were looking at, and this has been done by many labs, and clinical labs have reproduced similar types of studies, where you want to understand where your source of variation. If you take an assay across 5 different labs and you start seeing different results from different labs, what's the source of that? A large portion of that is differences in reagents. So if you can standardize reagents, that's one thing. We found out a major source of problems was how well your instrument was set up and understanding that these instruments were performing equally. Then you come to issues like handling of the sample, staining of the sample, and then finally data analysis, which is a key critical difference when looking at different sites.
Yeah, and I guess all of these points really come down to often when I've coming from an immunology background, when I come in and take a look at a cytometer and dig inside there, you know, it's still to me just amazing that all of the different components work so well, because there's so many points of variability and variation. And, you know, it would be great if you told me, oh, someday we're just going to have you just load a single tube and it's going to send out information to all other instruments and make everything work perfectly across sites. And maybe that's a kind of a foolish notion. And,
the holy grail.
Yeah. And instead, it's still, it is still a challenge, but we are making progress. The field's making progress, whether it's standardizing controls, standardizing maybe requirements and expectations, both on staining procedures and proper SOPs, as well as actually putting the onus on the manufacturers as well, and when it comes to reagents and the systems.
And I think the field really has, the flow cytometry field really has matured over the years in that respect. And CYTO and CYTO University have been instrumental in doing that, and the various forums that we have for doing standardization. Companies are trying to do it within the company, and a lot of work is also being done across countries. A lot of the work that's being done out of NIST to come up with fluorescent standards so that basically we can all talk the same language. Our instruments will never be the exact same, but as much as possible, we can talk the same language when we're talking about fluorescence units and intensities and things like that.
Yeah, well, that's great, Alan. Unfortunately, we're running out of time for our podcast today. But this has been a great conversation, and it's wonderful to have your insight. And, you know, I guess in closing, I mean, this is an area that you've been very interested in. And I like to ask everybody, like, what are they proud of, or what have they accomplished that is a really good sense of pride of what they've done, either in areas related to cytometry or just science in general. And I'd like to maybe close on that. I know you've had many years in the field of cytometry, coming on 40 years, I guess. And what do you want to be known for, or what do you feel that you have made a real good impact in?
Well, I'd like to think for some of the biology, but that's sort of in my dim past. I guess the two things that I've been involved with that I feel most proud of, or I'll actually add in three, because for me, for the last 20 years, what I've been trying to do is really push cytometry as a technology because it enables research. So the idea is that by developing better tools, we can develop better research. So, I mean, I guess the main thing that I'm proudest of is the development of the cytometry and setup and tracking system, because it was the very first system that really allowed customers to understand and users to understand how their instruments were working and setting things up. Was associated with, not a major leader, but again, the change in the number of fluorochromes, all of the serogen reagents coming out. And then the last thing is that has given me great pleasure is going around and giving lectures around the world with the Horizon program and otherwise, talking to people doing flow cytometry, understanding their issues, and able to take that information back and then come up with the next generation of setup and QC and standardization. So it's an ever-evolving process, and we certainly aren't at the end.
Yeah, you know, those aren't some bad feathers to have in your cap, so it's definitely things that you should be proud of.
If you are interested in learning more about flow cytometry or would like to speak to a flow cytometry expert, please visit bdbiosciences.com. Ciao.